before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and as always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. Hope everyone out there is having a good summer. Let's get started. We've got a lot of good stuff for you this month, and we'll get started with beer news. Before we start on this month's new items, I'd like to apologize to any of my listeners out there who tried to call into our live show last month. Unfortunately, a glitch with our phone system sent everyone direct to voicemail rather than ringing in our studio. So if you tried to call in, please accept my heartfelt apologies and rest assured that when and if we have another live Drinking on the Last Frontier, we'll make sure to test the phones in advance. Now let's move on to this month's news. Matanuska Brewing has opened its new location in downtown Anchorage. Located at 535 West 3rd Avenue, Matanuska Brewing Downtown joins its other two locations, one in Midtown Anchorage on East Benson and the other in Eagle River. Cooper Landing Brewing Company is making progress on its new standalone brewery. Located on the Sterling Highway just east of the Sunrise Inn, the foundations of the new facility were completed in early June. After issuing a record $2.5 million fine to Heineken USA in April, the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau this month announced the acceptance of a $420,000 offer in compromise from Constellation Brands' Crown Import subsidiary. According to the government, between January 1, 2016 and April 25, 2019, Constellation used a third party to make illegal payments to retailers in an effort to secure draft beer placements. This fine comes as the government has stepped up its policing efforts on the beer industry over the last year, collecting nearly $6 million in the process. In addition to fining Heineken $2.5 million for illegally supplying free draft systems to retailers and for making slotting fee payments, the government last December accepted $1.5 million from Miami's Eagle Brands for inducing retailers and blocking out competing brands. The beer distributor also allegedly provided free draft systems to retailers with the understanding that only the wholesaler's products could be served on these taps. Last May, the agency accepted $900,000 from Ohio's Warsteiner Imports Incorporated for engaging in Tide House commercial bribery and exclusive outlet violations. In March, the government fined Illinois Brewers Distributing Company $350,000 for violating federal consignment sales laws. The agency also accepted $325,000 from Illinois Elgin Beverage last year for pay-to-play violations. Earlier this year, leaders from the Brewers Association Beer Institute and National Beer Wholesalers Association and other alcohol lobbying groups penned a letter to House and Senate representatives serving on their respective appropriations committees, urging Congress to fund the enforcement agencies in the fiscal year 2020 at $139 million. In their request, the group specifically noted the agency's role in, quote, enforcing the Federal Alcohol Administration Act, including its provisions to educate and preclude unfair trade practices. The beverage alcohol industry needs a well-funded agency to operate successfully, they wrote. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company is receiving positive reviews for a new series of ads titled Beer for Exploring. The new series consists of three 30-minute spots titled Rain Check, Last Call, and Binge Watching. The brand hopes to personify the freedom of adventuring through nature's wild places with beer in the backpack and not a bullhorn. These great ads turn down life's volume using only natural sounds and the occasional clink of a beer to convey a message of tranquil outdoor socializing. If you're interested in seeing them, the company has uploaded them to YouTube. Tickets for Anchorage Brewing Company's The Culmination Beer Festival went on sale at noon on June 4th and sold out within 48 hours. Tickets were $100 for the world-famous festival, which will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. on July 20th at the brewery and features numerous beers and breweries not normally available in Alaska. On June 1st, King Street Brewing Company celebrated the one-year anniversary of its move into its new brewery. At the new facility, the rooftop deck is open with tremendous views of Anchorage, and sound absorption panels have been installed in the tap room. The Trappist Ales, produced by the 19 monks of the St. Sixtus Abbey in West Villeterne, Flanders, have been described as the world's most sought-after beer. Just over 5,000 barrels are produced annually, and drinkers are tempted by the regular appearance of its darkest brew at the top of the world rankings must travel in person and on appointment to pick up their allotted two crates. The monks brew three beers, a blonde that is 5.8% alcohol, and West Verleven 8 and 12, the latter of which is regularly ranked as the best beer in the world despite its hefty 10.2% alcohol by volume. But even the reclusive brothers have had to change with the times, to an extent. In order to stay one step ahead of those seeking to sell their beer at steeply inflated prices, the Abbey has announced it is going digital. A website has been set up where customers can order their two crates with priority given to recent and new customers. Drinkers will still need to come in person to the Abbey shop nestled in Flemish farmland to pick up their purchases, but they will avoid having to use a hotline that at peak times has attracted about 85,000 callers an hour. Brother Manu van Hecht, the abbot of St. Sixtus Abbey, said he was determined to ensure the Cistercian monastery maintained control after a recent incident in which their bottles were found on sale in a Dutch supermarket. He said, "The new sales system meets the needs of many Westfordly enthusiasts. We have thought long and hard about a good and customer-friendly alternative. Beer sales at the Abbey will remain exclusively aimed at private customers. The web store is therefore only accessible to consumers, not to professional buyers. We want to give as many people as possible the opportunity to purchase Trappist Westfordly at the correct price. Anyone who does not adhere to the sales rules and abuses the system will be denied access to the online store. A crate of 24 bottles of the highly prized Westfleten 12 costs 45 euros direct from the Abbey. The new system allows the monks to link bottles to buyers should they appear on sale elsewhere. Customers will need to create a profile leaving their date of birth, address, mobile phone number, email address, and the license plate number of their car. Last year, the monks of St. Sixtus, who received their first brewing license signed by King Leopold I in 1839, expressed their disappointment when it was discovered that the Jan Linders supermarket chain, without the permission or knowledge of the Abbey, had been selling three types of the renowned beer at about five times the price charged by the monks. John Mitchell, the man who is credited as establishing the first brew pub in North America, passed away on June 16th. The craft beer landscape we enjoy in the U.S. today is an amalgam of cultures, history, and hard work of many hands, but John Mitchell is known as the grandfather of Canadian craft beer, and his work building independent beer in North America inspired generations of craft brewers. In 1982, he opened Canada's first craft brewery in Horseshoe Bay, British Columbia. With his tenacious spirit and a pioneering drive, John brewed real ale in small batches using all malt mash, whole cone hops, and open fermenters. He pronounced it the best beer in Canada. Mitchell's reputation soon spread internationally, and letters poured in from aspiring brewery owners around the world asking for help. Then in 1984, he opened Spinnaker's in Victoria, Canada, the first brew pub in North America. It was a concept he was sure would catch on, and he was right. Over the years, Mitchell would be involved in several other brewing projects. As Canada's original craft brewer, John Mitchell was more than a beer maker. He was an agent of change. The advances he pushed for ushered in a new era of government regulation that established the British Columbia craft beer industry and paved the way for Canada's other provinces to follow. Mitchell accomplished his objective of restoring draught beer back to its days of glory. That's it for our news. We'll be right back in a moment with our first interview. You're listening to Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna.
Everybody's got a story. We want to share those stories and keep you in the loop. Tune in to the KDLL Evening News weekdays at 5:20 to hear stories about your community, your neighbors, and to get the latest news to help you make informed decisions. The KDLL Evening News with me, Shaylin Cochran, weekdays at 5:20 right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. We've got Darcy Kneufel, the beer ambassador of Midnight Sun Brewing Company in Anchorage. Hey, Darcy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great. First off, congratulations on your 24th anniversary that you just celebrated last month.
Oh, thank you. We had an awesome time.
Yeah, I just had some of your anniversary beer, 24 Russian Imperial Stout, and I can say it is excellent.
The boys did a killer job on that, and I think we definitely didn't want to do anything barrel-aged for this year because we know we're going huge next year, but we're Midnight Sun, so we always have to come up with something that's just going to be big and bold and brave, and that beer just came out phenomenal. I was really excited about it.
Yeah, it's a really good drinker. Any of our listeners out there like good beer or like Russian Imperial Stouts, they really need to see about picking up a four-pack. I really enjoyed it. In fact, I've enjoyed a lot of your recent limited-release cans or whatever. I got some of the Maybach. That I thought that was excellent.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
And then your straight-up Saison. That's another one that I was really impressed with.
That's one we really kind of stuck to, especially with those two. We really wanted to stick with the style and just do a solid straight-up Saison, no flair, no gadgets to it. And it came out so good. It's like that perfect summer drinker right now. It's making me really happy.
I know what you mean. Sometimes I really enjoy having a beer that doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles. That's just a really good representation of the style. There's a reason the style became popular. It doesn't have to have a ton of different things in it.
For sure.
So I know one of the other recent projects that you guys were involved in was the Brewed with Pride for 2019. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So Brewed with Pride got started last year. They celebrate Pride in Alaska every June, and there's different cities are popping up with all kinds of celebrations. And up here in Anchorage, we worked with Identity, and they do a thing called the Rainbow Run, where they go out and do a nice little run in the later evening on a Tuesday night, and they do a beer garden afterwards. And so the first couple of years, we donated beer, and then last year, as we were getting going with our limited edition program, we thought it'd be really cool if we made their very own beer for them. So we decided to come up with something kind of fun and throw a twist on things. And then as we were talking about this, we found out that Resolution wanted to do a beer for it. And then we found out Broken Tooth had actually been brewing a Pride beer for their Pride Film Festival that they do every year. So we put it out to all of the breweries in the guild and said, hey, if anybody wants to make a Pride beer, it's a super good time. So we started the Brewed with Pride project. This year we have 10 different breweries, and then we have Zip Kombucha is even making a special kombucha, and Alaska Cidery up in Talkeetna is doing a cider for it. So the beers will be featured all over at tons of different events, and the breweries are donating to lots of great organizations through their beer to help those guys raise some funds. So all around, it's been a blast, and we actually just released our version. This year we're doing a Stonewall Riot. And it's a tangerine wheat. We just released it last night, and it is, oh my gosh, delicious.
Yeah, I was looking here at the list of the other breweries that are doing it. I guess 49th State is doing a Kettle Sour.
Yeah.
Alaska Cider Works is doing a Perry. I love Perry. For our listeners who don't remember my cider feature, Perry is like cider, only it's made from pears instead of apples. Let's see what else we have. Black Spruce is doing an IPA. Bleeding Heart is doing a cream ale with blueberries. Broken Tooth is doing a Hefeweizen. Denali is doing a Weiss beer. Kenai River Brewing Company is doing a Blood Orange wheat beer. You guys, as you said, a Tangerine American Wheat. Resolution is doing a steam beer. Seward Brewing Company is doing an Imperial Golden Saison with pink peppercorns and gold glitter. So much for that.
I can't wait to see that one.
So much for that. Let's just keep it a straight Saison without any bells and whistles idea. And then, as you said, Zip Kombucha is doing a lemongrass, blueberry, ginger, and thyme quencher. So that sounds like we have there's a lot of people have been in, or a lot of breweries across the state have been involved in this one.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We get great response. And it's kind of a good excuse for the breweries to kind of come up with something completely different, have a good time with it. It's been a blast working on the whole project.
So what else you guys got coming down the pike here for the summer and into the fall as we move into max tourist season?
We're taking just a little breather in here. I think we don't have a beer release coming. I think yesterday we were all excited. We don't have a beer release. Oh, no, I take that back. We weren't going to have a beer release, but actually we just tasted. We have a new Brett IPA that will be coming out next Tuesday. Sean just tasted the barrels and he says it's absolutely perfect. So looking forward to that. And then at the beginning of July, we're going to take a couple weeks off. And then we've got the Angler, which is our American Wild. And that's going to be re-released on July 2nd, just in time for 4th of July.
That's another good one. I remember that one from last year.
So tapping a little into those, into our barrel-aged beers as our tank space has been kind of sucked up by summer production. It's been going a little crazy with Wolfpack, especially this summer. So the guys have been staying busy, busy, busy.
Well, that's a good problem to have. So you got any plans to expand any of your production? I mean, I know you've been pretty much running at max capacity for the last couple of years. Do you have anything coming down the road to increase your tankage or anything like that?
I think we're looking at getting another 80-barrel fermenter in, and that would be 100% for Wolfpack production. That's how fast we're going through it this year. So that's kind of our big plan for the winter time is to kind of get that thing rolling, get it moved in, and then be full force again next summer.
Wow, you're going to be able to actually shoehorn another 80-barrel fermenter in there? You guys don't have that much space left, do you?
Lee says we've got room, and he's kind of the master of the beer room Jenga, so I'm going to leave that up to him.
Oh, he's the man with the plan, huh?
Yeah, he makes the beer, he makes it happen, and I make it sure it sells.
Right. What's the next few festivals you guys be at? I know you'll be down here in August for our festival. Have you got any between now and then?
So we've got, actually, that's the other thing, is the month of July, we kind of slow down. We actually don't have another festival coming up until July. We'll be at Beer and Bacon on the 27th at the Lakefront Hotel, which is always a good time. Like tons of bacon, loads of beer. And usually we get really great weather for that one too. And then we've got the first weekend in August is going to be a crazy one. So we'll be down at Salmon Fest.
Right.
We'll have some beer on there. We'll be down there to root around and have some good times. And then there'll be the Downriver Festival up north in Fairbanks. And then Kenai Brewers Fest happens on Saturday the 10th in August.
Well, that all sounds good. Anything else that you want to tell us about, brag about?
We're fairly excited with a new distributor down in the Washington area. So if anyone just so happens to be from Washington and has been missing our beer, it's going to be back on shelves. And so keep an eye out. And otherwise, it's summertime. So grab a beer and get out there. That's what we're going to do.
All right. Well, hey, that sounds great there, Darcy. Once again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you down here at the festival. And this beer that you mentioned earlier, the Brett IPA, is that going to be released in cans or strictly on draft up there?
That'll be just strictly draft. With those Brett beers, we don't like to get near the bottler or the cans with those too much. just because, you know, the Britannomyces is everybody's friend and likes to stick around and party,
right,
no matter how much you clean it up. So we won't have a, well, it'll just be a draft release only on those.
Well, hey, once again, thanks a lot, and we'll be talking to you.
All right, thanks. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
You're listening to Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Wherever she may be.
KDLL Public Radio presents a benefit concert with Tumble Down House at 9 p.m. June 25th at the Flats Bistro in Kenai. These San Francisco songwriting deviants range from gritty saloon jazz to Tom Waits in a cocktail dress. Tickets are $25, available online at kdll.org and at the Flats.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. In celebration of the arrival of summer, I'd like to talk about the Beer Garden. It's an institution with a fascinating history and has influenced both European and American drinking habits for many years. Traditionally, beer gardens are open-air spaces where beer is served at rather simple tables, often under trees. Beer gardens are considered a core element of Southern German beer culture, but the concept has been copied and modified to fit into any beer-oriented gastronomical environment. While large beer gardens like the ones in Munich only evolved in the 19th century, the roots of the beer garden culture are much older. The oldest legal document regulating taverns in Bavaria was the Lex Brewerei, dated 1244. It first made the innkeeper, defined as the owner of a legitimate tavern, a legal profession. It says that no one should drink wine or beer except in such a legitimate tavern. The text does not mention if these taverns were allowed to have beer gardens, but pictures from the time show people dancing and drinking outside, so most probably it was a custom to also drink in the gardens of such establishments. Before these regulations were established in medieval cities, noble guests and officers would be invited into a burgher's home, which preceded the more professional tavern of later times, to have food and drink, but lower-ranking people would have been served jugs of beer outside and be encouraged to bring their own food. Up until today, it's still a custom in many Bavarian beer gardens to bring food and even a personalized stein to the beer garden. Many medieval towns were granted the right to brew beer, which actually meant that they could sell the beer that was brewed by the town patricians. Patricians were burghers who owned a house made of stone and had the right to vote at a city level. This gave a boost to the growth of, albeit a small-scale, brewing industry that developed the beer styles that became typical for the town. These brewers, some of whom, but not all, were licensed innkeepers, soon began to build cellars on the outskirts of their cities to store and mature their brews. These cellars were a core element in the development of lager beer. If they were kept cold enough, modern fermenting yeast would thrive in them. By the 17th and 18th centuries, some of these cellars had gained popularity as places to drink, especially among college students, as there was always fresh and cool beer at hand. To keep these cellars cool, brewers would plant tree varieties featuring large masses of leaves, such as water chestnuts, that could substantially lower the surrounding temperature by evaporating water through their leaves. These trees would also provide shade for those sitting off dem Keller, or atop the cellar, where the brewer was allowed by law to sell his beer, but not full meals. Eventually, brewers were also allowed to accommodate drinkers indoors. This is why some beer gardens have adjacent beer halls featuring simple furniture and the same limited offer of drinks, i.e. beer, and not much else. Notable examples are the Lohenkeller and the Augustiner Keller in Munich. Munich's beer gardens became extremely popular in the 19th century. Breweries grew in size, and so did their gardens. Today, the largest beer garden in the world is the Hirschgarten in Munich, seating 8,000 guests, with 1,200 of them in a full-service area and the rest in self-service. They are offered a choice of beers from three different local brewers. However, its fame is challenged by the only slightly smaller beer garden around the Chinese Tower in Englischer Garten, serving Hofbrauhaus beers. Both gardens were formerly owned by the royal family of Bavaria and opened to the public in the last years of the 19th century. During the 19th century, the concept of the beer garden was exported to other regions of Europe and, in fact, the whole world, often along with beer from Bavaria. Bavarian-style dark lager was the typical product to be found there at the time. In large capital cities like Berlin and Vienna, these gardens were often the venues for concerts. Some of the masterpieces of classical music, including many waltzes by Johann Strauss, were first performed in front of a beer-drinking audience in these popular gardens. By the middle of the century, thanks to a large wave of German immigration, the beer garden hit America. Stanley Baron writes in his book, Brewed in America, that German-style beer gardens were popular in San Antonio, Texas, where in 1856, one-third of the population was German, a designation that included some immigration from both Austria and Bohemia, as well as what we consider Germany today. For New York City, Baron records, quote, "The Bowery in New York City became particularly famous for a number of beer gardens that were established on the street in the 1860s. These beer gardens are generally spoken of approvingly because they provided entertainment for simple, hardworking families and offered a wholesome antidote to the corrupt and licentious gin dives or dancing parlors that were also current in New York and other cities. At the beer garden, entrance was free," end quote. Baron quotes Edvard Winslow Martin, a pseudonym of James Dabney McCable, who wrote in his 1868 book, The Secrets of the Great City, quote, "Beer and other liquids are served out at a small cost. The music is a great attraction to the Germans. It's exquisite in some places, especially in the Atlantic Garden, which is situated in the Bowery near Canal Street," end quote. The area east of the Bowery and north of Division was known as Little Germany until the 1870s. In 1871, Harper's Monthly wrote a piece on the Atlantic Garden, quote, "On every side there are family groups, father, mother, and children, all merry, all sociable, all well-behaved and quiet. There is not the remotest danger of insult or disturbance or need of the presence of any policeman," end quote. This last quote is of some significance, as at the time the rising tide of the temperance movement was arguing that prohibition was needed to combat the evils of the saloon. Alcohol was seen by the Anti-Saloon League as something which men indulged in and were corrupted by, leading them to bring violence and venereal disease into their family home and depriving their children of their financial support. The image of a happy family enjoying a concert in a beer garden on a Sunday afternoon was a fine antidote to the prohibitionist propaganda. Sadly, it proved to be an insufficient one, and prohibition put the beer garden out of business in America, at least for a few years. After the end of prohibition, the beer garden became an all-American institution, made popular again by the famous song, Roll Out the Barrel, performed by the Andrews Sisters. The same tune is played back in Germany with a different text and title called Rosamund. Today, the beer garden is making a comeback in many areas of the U.S. In New York City, the Bohemian Hall in Astoria, Queens, the city's only surviving old beer garden, is once again bustling. It was built in 1910 and on warm days still seats thousands of people under soaring trees. Here in Alaska, given our love of the outdoors, it's no surprise that beer gardens in various forms are extremely popular. Some breweries, such as Kenai River Brewing and St. Elias Brewing, have patio seating. 49th State Brewing, Midnight Sun Brewing, and King Street Brewing in Anchorage all have rooftop seating, while Hoodoo Brewing in Fairbanks, 49th State in Healy, and Haynes Brewing Company have beer gardens enclosed by a fence. Indeed, the current popularity of canned craft beers in our state is being driven in part by the ease in which they allow craft beer to be enjoyed in the great outdoors. In short, drinking beer outdoors is here to stay, at least until summer's over and winter rules again. We'll be right back with our next interview here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.